This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Embracing the Spirit of Nature, Waking Up to a World Filled with Fairies. And the author is Linda Shaler Cooper. And Linda joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Steve.
Well, great to have you with us. And you're also known as the Garden Fairy. We're going to talk about that later. But let me read what you have written about your book so everyone understands your focus on fairies and gnomes. You say this: people are fascinated with the possibility of the existence of fairies and gnomes and are very interested in seeing what they look like in the photographs. Once they see them, it opens up a new way of experiencing nature. Surprising, awe, and excitement are generally the reaction that I have witnessed. You also say this: nature spirits and fairies have become increasingly common topics. Embracing the spirit of nature will invite you into a world of magic few have experienced by sharing actual raw photography of fairies, gnomes, and more. So, this is very different. Most people, when we think of fairies, what do we think about? Tinkerbell, you know, Disney, right? Peter Pan. But this is something that you see very real in nature and in this life, correct?
Correct.
And there's no doubt in your mind?
No, because actually the photographs tell the story. I personally have been fascinated with the whole fairy mystical realm or mythical realm since I was a little girl. And through my years of growing up, I kind of forgot about them. And then I went on a journey with my ex-husband for quite a few years. We went camping for 2.5 years, actually, and we spent a lot of time in nature. And I feel like I really got downloaded with how nature shows itself. You know, the way seeds drop onto the ground and plants grow from there. If you look on a hill, you can see the natural way that plants create themselves again. In my early 30s, woke up spiritually from taking these journeys, I started looking around and thinking, well, there's got to be more to life than just what I can see. So first of all, I ended up finding a spiritual teacher, and she opened my eyes to the universe. And then I got fascinated with my own garden and started planting things, and they started growing into gigantic proportions, and they started vibrating in wonderful ways, the plant material. Then I started thinking about the nature spirits, and then realized that they were working with me, because my gardens were just growing into these gigantic proportions. So then I woke up to this passion for being in the garden, and running alongside of that, I also had a passion for the mineral kingdom. So those two things, so nature became just like an incredible, of incredible interest to me. So in between the two trips that we took, people started asking me to work in their gardens for them. And so that's what started my garden business, my landscaping business. And after a while, I realized the nature spirits, the fairies and the gnomes, were working with me. I actually asked my spiritual teacher, Gladys, do fairies exist? Because I always wondered, and I'd never seen them. And she says, well, of course they do, my dear. And she went into her library and brought out this book that was written by Daphne Charters, who is a woman who lived in England. She's passed on right now. And she had a communication with the nature spirits in her garden, the fairies and the gnomes. And she dialogued with them telepathically. And they got to speak about what their purpose was and how they function and all of that. And she wrote a book called 40 Years with the Fairies that has been rewritten at the moment by a guy by the name of Michael Pilarski. Anyway, that information really triggered me to become conscious of the nature spirits. And I could, the way I could tell that I personally cannot see them, and but the way I could tell they were with me is I'd get this burning sensation in my hands. So I knew the energy was running, and I could see flickering in the sides of my eyes. So that's how I knew that they were with me. And plus, my gardens were spectacular, the ones that we co-created together. They just grew magnificently, and they had a shimmering quality that was not present in the surrounding gardens.
Now, you called your gardens kind of filled with a magical light-filled frequency.
Yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know, people would stop in front of the gardens that I created, including my own garden, and they would just stand there and stare. And what was happening is they were being filled with the frequency of the magic that was emanating from the garden. So I learned, or I realized, through doing thousands of gardens for people in Orange County, that not only were they getting a beautiful garden, they were actually getting a healing. So by them asking me to come into their space, they were actually getting an activation where the land was getting activated, and the nature spirits were coming with me. And so I learned...
You learned to work with them.
Yes, I learned that they were working with me. You know, mm-hmm. Once I woke up to the fact that they were working... They were co-creating with me, and then it got really exciting. And I used to put crystals in the ground in people's gardens. You know, my clients would share a lot of their situations with me. You know, it became like a friendship almost. And if they were, you know, suffering in any way, I would use the crystals in the ground on a feng shui point of view, in placing them in specific areas to help help these people heal. So the minerals and the plant material and working the ground and also communicating with the nature spirits really created an environment of healing and magic and beauty.
Well, you say this, these are potent times as Mother Earth, the humans, and all kingdoms, seen and unseen, are going through major upheaval. Now, explain what you mean.
Well, we can all see the weather conditions on our planet, you know, all the flooding and the severe weather that we're having. Well, that's directly proportionate to our human nature. And we, as spiritual beings having a human experience, have a responsibility to bring ourselves into peace and harmony within ourselves. And the more of us that can let go of the fear by going within and asking the questions and waking up and understanding that we each have a responsibility to not only ourselves, but to our Mother Earth and humanity, to come into peace and harmony within ourselves. So when we have a violent nature, guess what? It's expressed in our outer nature. So if we can come into a place of peace and harmony and love, open our hearts to love, let go of fear, and embrace love, then if each one of us did that, our outer nature would respond in the same way.
Describe some of these photographs that you have taken and how you see these fairies, these gnomes in plants. And are they in rocks as well? Do you see them there?
In the what?
Rocks.
Yes, it's amazing. You know, until I started taking photographs, I wasn't really aware of their physicality. What happened was I had the idea, okay, let's see if we can find them. So I started taking photographs, and they immediately started showing up. And so what happened is that as I saw them in the pictures, my awareness expanded. So now at first I didn't see them with my physical eyes. And I always wanted to, of course, but never could until I started taking photographs. So I would go into the garden and ask them to show up, first of all, open my heart, be in gratitude, ask them to please show up, and then I'd start taking photos of sort of what I thought were magical places. And then I'd go and look at my photos, and there they were. You know, and sometimes I couldn't see them at first. So
you could see faces and body forms.
Yes, they actually, well, see, they live in another realm of, they live in a different vibration than ours. And our physical brains have a narrow perspective. Our mind can see a lot more, but we have to train our minds to be able to see a broader spectrum. So they live on a different dimension. And that dimension is not necessarily as physical as ours. But my impression is that they've shown up in these physical forms in these photos so that we can identify them. A lot of times you'll see photographs of orbs, and a lot of times they're called light beings, and they do operate in orbs. But I feel like they wanted us to see them in physicality, physical, something that we could identify with, as in faces and bodies and so on. So a lot of the rocks have faces in them, gnome faces. And then the clouds have faces as well. So in my book,
And the flowers, you can see shapes that resemble faces.
Yes, they do. They show up as faces, or they show up as bodies, you know, like that we can identify with. And I love that about it, because I've seen a lot of photos of orbs, and yes, they are magical, and I really like that, but that's about as far as it goes. What I love about the photos that I have in my book is that they show up as in images that we can identify with. And so what happens with, once you see these photographs and you see what they look like, then when you go into nature, you start identifying it yourself. It actually shifts, it opens your eyes to seeing fifth dimensionally. So to me, that is just so exciting. I just love it. You know, I'm so excited about it, and I'm so grateful that they've shown up in this way and literally want to be seen.
And what we're seeing is energy. You call them nature's spirits, and they live in this subtle energy realm. And if you look for them, you know that you can find them.
Exactly. Well, once you see the photograph, then that opens your spectrum to seeing in a different way. I mean, even my sister, who kind of looks at me sideways sometimes, you know, once I showed her the photos, she said, "Gosh, Linda, I can see them now." She says, "I was riding my bicycle, and I saw faces in the rocks, and I saw this, and I saw that." So it's kind of exciting, because number one, they want to be seen, and number two, for us who have wondered, and I'm speaking of myself, of course, wondered whether they really do exist, here's physical proof of it. And I have looked on the Internet. I'm not the best researcher in the world, but I have looked everywhere for books of photographs of nature spirits, and I haven't seen much. Mostly drawings of fairies and that people have seen. And so here, I think this delivers something unique, because these are raw photographs. I haven't messed with them at all, except maybe brightened them or zoomed in on them. So I think it's pretty exciting.
The title of the book, Embracing the Spirit of Nature, Waking Up to a World Filled with Fairies. And the author and photographer is Linda Shaler Cooper. And Linda, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can go to my website called thecrystalgardenfairy.com. And Balboa Press is the, you can go to the Balboa Press icon, and it'll guide you there to get the book. You can get it on Amazon, as well as I have an ebook off my website, and I believe that Balboa Press does have an ebook available as well. And that's about all I know as far as how, I think they have it at Barnes & Noble too.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
This interview brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, LaBellaVitaCosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, A Teenage Rescuer, and the author is Buck Fisher, and Buck joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Abbott Press. Hello, Buck.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. A Teenage Rescuer. This is your fourth book, and we're going to talk a little bit about your other three later. But A Teenage Rescuer, this young girl, Kathy, she has some great challenges, an abused runaway child, but she ends up rescuing a number of people. She just has that character in her in spite of all her challenges. Is that what Kathy is about?
That's it. Overcoming odds.
Overcoming the almost impossible odds, right?
Right.
Yeah, she rescues her uncle. She rescues someone in an airplane wreck at an earthquake scene. And then eventually she gets some professional training, it looks like. You seem to be really have a soft spot for those who are abused and face these terrible challenges as young people.
Yes. I love to volunteer for Special Olympics when I'm able.
And so why did you write this book? What was the idea? How did you get motivated to come up with this kind of a theme, Buck?
a lot of my ideas come off of television or what people say. I walk around, pass out pieces of paper for my books, and I get a lot of ideas from people I talk to. The biggest thing is what people say about how they can't get ahead in life because of what's happened in their family.
So we've got families that are really struggling, and teenagers and kids growing up in those families for all kinds of reasons. A lot of times drug use, right? Illegal drug use.
Right.
Become a great scourge of society, hasn't it?
Yeah, we lost a son-in-law to drug use.
Well, you know personally the pain and the also the destruction of you know of a family of individuals.
Yes.
But there is hope. People can turn themselves around, and that's what your stories are about.
Right.
So tell us about Kathy. Tell us a little bit more about her in detail.
She runs away from home and goes to the mountains, and this is where she runs across the trapper, who later is her uncle. She finds out that it is her uncle, but he wanted to know what she was doing there, and she told him to look for herself, and he lifted up her shirt and her coat and almost passed out when he saw her back, you know, because it was, had beat marks all the way up and down it, you know.
So her father or, you know, his brother had done that to her?
Her mother and her mother's boyfriend.
Oh, so a real dysfunctional family, obviously. So her uncle has a terrible accident.
Yeah, steps in a bear trap.
Ooh.
And he sends his dog back to get her. And he tells her what she had. She runs and walks for 24 hours to get where he's at. And he explains to her what she has to do and to get him out of the trap. And she's able to do that. And then she has to make a crutch and wrap his leg up and all this. And try to get him back, and they made such slow progress that he sent his dog after his friend who came after them on the four-wheeler to take him back to the house. And then when he finds out that he's got a niece, he's got to change his life from being a recluse as a trapper in the mountains to somebody that's responsible to take care of her. So they moved down the valley and where she can attend school, and that's where they live when she goes out on her second rescue mission.
Well, tell us about this target audience that you see. What age group are we looking at?
Probably from 15 to 25 in that area.
And it's really just one target group that you're focused on?
Yeah.
Now, people would be surprised of a writer, and this is your fourth book. You haven't had a whole lot of education, and here you are, a writer.
And a friend of mine is a professor at MIT, and he teaches people how to write, teaches the writers how to write. And I picked at him, and I said, see there, you don't have to have years of education to write a book. And it's Kenneth Manning. And I sent him the Hill People. And I asked him later on if he saw anything wrong with it or, you know, his dialogue or anything like that. And he says, not a thing. And that's a high compliment coming from someone like him.
That's for sure. Very good. Good for you and good for all of us. Well, you see the news every day of what young people are having to face in many homes, misuse, abuse, even rape. But you say if drugs or abuse is a part of a person's life, it should not hinder them for becoming what they want to achieve. So that's the story. I guess that's the theme in this book, Teenage Rescuer, and it's also a theme in your other books?
Well, in Higgins Bluff it is. Nurse Maid's Dream is about a homesteader lady who's raped when she's 17, and when she gets pregnant, her father kicks her out of the home, and the homesteader picks her up and takes her to Oklahoma. The Hill People of Science Fiction, the first sentence in the synopsis is, Charlie from Earth meets May Lang from Talbonox of the Southern Hemisphere.
Science fiction, all right. That's a little...
That's what I like to write.
Do you? That's really different from these other real-life stories. Well, let's see. Let's talk about another rescue mission that Kathy has, an airplane wreck.
Yes. Lieutenant Governor Thaddeus McCorkle and his wife and three girls, she rides a horse for 2 days to get to the airplane wreck because it's in rugged mountain country. And then when she gets there, Thaddeus has got a broke leg and still in the airplane, so she goes up on a mountain top so she has radio reception to call the rescue, and then she goes back and makes a signal fire, and the Thaddeus McCorkle's wife Helen does everything she can to make sure Kathy goes out on rescue missions. And after she graduates from high school, Helen sends her to search and rescue school and gets her, gives her a dog that's been trained for 2 years.
And then she has another rescue, an earthquake.
Yeah. That's kind of fashioned after the earthquake in West Yellowstone in the 50s that the ground opened up and swallowed cars and all that kind of stuff. And there was a bunch of people that was injured, but that was what it was fashioned after. And she found these two children down in a crevice in the ground, and they was terribly traumatized from being that ordeal. And months later, after their trauma ceased because of affection and love from Kathy, they was able to open up and tell what happened to their parents.
Well, you have a theme in your book. You say, coming from homes where drugs are used, peer pressure, and how to overcome all odds and become their best. So here, Kathy becomes a role model.
Yes.
So tell us how she, do you kind of go into how she overcomes, you know, all her memories and bad experiences that a lot of times just immobilize people?
Yeah. Helen later on makes sure that when no relative speaks for the children, it tells in the book why. Helen made sure that Kathy adopted the two children. So here she is going to search and rescue school, 18 years old, and she's got a boy that's 12 and a girl that's 10 that is legally hers.
Well, Kathy loves to help people, and she's dedicated to this rescue kind of work. And, of course, that dog, her specially trained dog, really means a lot to her.
Yes, and she goes out. In the end of the book, she goes out on one rescue mission with the dog she gets from Helen, where a bus accident where it went down into the trees and nobody could see it from the air, and they had to track the people because there wasn't anybody in the bus. They had to track the people to a cave where they was huddled up, waiting to be rescued or hoping somebody rescued them.
One thing we want to point out to everyone, your books do not have profanity, obscene words, or any kind of gestures. Why is that?
Because the world's full of that stuff to start with, and no use adding to it. The more exciting and clean you can make the books is a challenge.
Well, that seems like a lot of fiction today is certainly filled with that kind of material, and congratulations for rising above that, Buck. And that does take creativity to do that.
Yes, it does. Striving to live a Christian life helps with that.
Anything else you'd like to tell us about this book or any of your other books? Give us some concluding thoughts, Buck.
My wife likes the A Nursemaid's Dream because after the homesteader picks her up, she becomes a nursemaid to the homesteaders. When we get sick, she'd go to there and help them until they got back on their feet. And she did that for 6 years. She had triplets, and they was taken away from her because of a crooked judge. And her dad was behind it, and her cousin. Because they didn't think that she could take care of the children on her own, you know. The government helped people back in those days, gave them grants, to start things and that kind of stuff. And that's what they did. They helped her. She wanted a truck farm, homesteads band together and gave her a homestead. But she wanted a truck farm. So the Army of Corps engineers did all the work, and the Army helped her with contract to the Army so she can distribute her produce and vegetables, and grapes and other things. She later sold wineries, and when she's 84 years old, with a friend, Deegan, they finally find her three girls, but she's 84 years old when she gets to see them again. And they are 62, I think it is.
Well, the name of this author, we're talking with Buck Fisher. He's the author of A Teenage Rescuer. He's also the author of Hagen's Bluff, A Nursemaid's Dream, and The Hill People. Buck, tell us how to get your book.
I have a website. It's www.buckfishersbooks.com. If you look up A Teenage Rescuer on Amazon.com and double-click on the picture, it'll bring up another picture by Arrow on top where they can read the first chapter and a little bit more about Kathy.
Well, very good, Buck. We appreciate you being with us on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to everyone by Abbott Press. Thank you so much, Buck.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Want to be challenged in a powerful way to leap beyond what you think is possible? Then join us Mondays for the Leah Jansen Show, every Monday at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com with Leah Jansen. Listen live as life coach Leah uses her coaching skills to give you the tools you need to take action and create momentum. You are encouraged to call in and share your greatest fears, challenges, and obstacles, and then listen as Leah obliterates those barriers to success. For more on Leah and the show, check out her website, LeahJansen.com. That's Leah, LeahJansen.com. Spend 1 hour with Leah, and you'll be captivated by her energy, enthusiasm, and magnetism. You'll quickly become addicted to her positive attitude and make-it-happen mentality. Ready for a life-changing, mood-altering show? Then get ready for Leah Jansen. And listen live to The Leah Jansen Show every Monday morning at 10 a.m., 9 a.m. Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, At Tildy's Thrift, and the author is Yulene Rear Cienfuegos. And Yuli joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Yuli.
Hello.
Well, this book has a bit of everything, some ghosts and some very serious subjects as well, racism, childhood bullying. It covers a gamut of just, I guess, real life and people's beliefs and their fears. I'll read what you have written a little bit so everyone understands what we're talking about. You say, although the shop is said to be haunted, Tildy's continues to be patronized by customers of every type imaginable. Strange events happen even when the presence of a gospel-singing trio who work in the back to check in donations. Something or someone is bent on taking down Tildy's. Could it be the return of demonic Nephilim? Could it be someone embittered by childhood bullying due to a deformity? Could it be racism? Well, this is a small southern town you call Hortonville, and they have a lot to deal with. And you ask the big question, what secrets exist at Tildy's? So we're going to find out about some of these secrets, as you put it. This is a very creative work. What motivated all of this, Yuli?
I used to volunteer at a thrift store for the Senior Citizen Club of Apple Valley, and it was so interesting, so very interesting. I met a lot of neat people who were working there, as well as the people who would come in looking for antiques or used clothing, or sometimes just to chat with friends. And my interest was piqued by these types of people. And one of the persons who worked with me said, you know, suppose the people who are deceased and whose clothes have been donated come back at night to get their clothes. So I started laughing. I said, now that's a thought.
Well, that's something different.
So I began thinking about that. What about these people? Because I had seen a lot of things in the store and around the store, although none of the characters is modeled about any particular person. And there, of course, are hangers-on wanting to make a quick buck out of people who are going in and out of the thrift store, even if they're around the donation room. So it was so exciting. So I decided to write the book and elaborate on the lives of the people who work there and the events that are happening there, and just play on that. And I really loved doing it.
Well, themes throughout the book: bullying, the paranormal, racism, Christian witness.
Oh yes, the trio, the Harmonettes.
The Harmonettes.
Harmonettes are from the minority community of Hortonville. And the proprietor finds them at a town event in the ballpark. She finds them singing, and she engages them to work for her if that's what they like. And, of course, all three of them would like that. And so they are really feisty. One is from the West Indies. Oh, I'm sorry, not the West Indies, from the Sea Islands along the alongside Charleston. I used to teach in Charleston, and one of my children was born in Charleston. And they have a special type of speech, and they also have some wonderful legends that come out of their Africanized background. And they still live, of course, in the low country of Charleston. And there's another one who's from North Carolina, and there's another one who is from... where is she from? Vilma and Magnolia, the minority community. And yes, so it's just a multiplicity of people who come in there with their own philosophies about what's happening at Tildy's, with all of these strange things going on, with clothing infested with insects, with all kinds of things, rips in the curtains and all of this. And it's due to because a lot of people think, rather, that it's because there is a ghost afoot. There was a dead body found there some years ago, and this body is supposed to come back from time to time and create havoc there and leave the residue of rose perfume in the area. And so that's why call it Tilby's Thrift that's haunted. But, of course, it may not be haunted. There's a prison close by. There is a person who has a bitter grudge against Matilda, and that's the name of the owner, Matilda. And, of course, there's a prison on the outskirts. Is that who's doing all this stuff and making people think it's haunted, or just what's going on? So I really enjoyed it. And then, of course, there's Miraculous Sam, who wants to do an exorcism.
Yes, they bring him in thinking that maybe he can solve it all, I guess. Huh?
Yes, but some people say, well, why don't you go and call my minister? I know he can do it, but he can exorcise this place, because you didn't have each room prayed over when it started. So Tilby says, no, I didn't, but I don't know. I haven't thought about that. But each one offers to utilize her pastor to come over to do the exorcism. But Miraculous Sam shows up, and he attempts to do the miraculous by exorcising the store. I wanted to read a little bit about that. On the following Monday, the rich smell of a pipe bowl with burning cherry bark tobacco announced the arrival of a large whiskered man in a dusty black derby hat with rheumy eyes set in skin like dried yellow parchment. He oozed into the room in a worn rusty brown suit and old crinkled floor shines that were run over at the heels and had slits cut out for the relief of his bunions. Geraldine wrinkled her nose and whispered to Matilda, whose lips were tightly pinched together, "What museum did he filch that old dusty derby from, I wonder?" He was known as Miraculous Sam and stood in the doorway, smiling his huge, horsey-like grin, showing off-white chiclet teeth. "I done come, yeah, to drive that old Satan out, to do a schism of that evil devil from the shop. Where he done act up?" A customer pointed towards the area of the dresses. He then proceeded to fan the crowd back away from the area where the last smell of roses had been detected. The crowd moved in a wave and gawked as he took on an unworldly and trembly tone of voice, calling out, oh, devil, get your ugly, evil self out of here. He surveyed the area with jerky head movements. Then he took out a little gray pouch and sprinkled some powder from it with his ham-like right hand, making a large circle. Next, he took some pig bones out of another pouch he carried. He threw the bones into the air above the circle. The customers moved far back with their mouths agape, and some of the women clutched or hid behind each other. "Y'all get back now. Get on back. You're going to run through that back door yonder," he pointed. Then, conspiratorially, he half-whispered, "Y'all watch him now. Watch him." As the customers gawked with wide eyes towards the door, old Sam took his foot and kicked up the powder. "See him? See him? See? There he go, there he go. He left, he smoked. Don't smell it, y'all, because you can get possessed." The customers were speechless and didn't move. Then old Sam ambled over to the cashier's desk, held his dusty ham-like hand out and said, "Miss Tilby, I charge us $10 for my scissors." Matilda looked at him sternly and said, "I didn't hire you to come in here to do any exorcism. Now you just get and don't you ever come back in here scaring my customers. You hear?" She was red-faced and her voice was loud with authority. Several pairs of eyes followed him as he shuffled out muttering something about some people having no appreciation at all and saying loudly as he exited, "Don't y'all come looking for me to help y'all when death comes a-creeping in your room." All right.
Well, very good writing and very good reading. It really kind of brings it to life. Here's another question. Are these strange things that are happening? Is it the work of someone who is embittered over childhood bullying due to a deformity?
Okay. Well, I will reveal the plot if I tell you that.
Well, then don't.
Well, there is a person who had a deformity of an extra finger on each hand.
Ah.
It just felt.
Okay.
Somebody looks at her and tells her, some women in a grocery store see her, and they look at her hands, and they go, oh, she's an offshoot of the Nephilim.
Mm.
And they thought of her as a monster. Well, in school, she was bullied by, like this. She was called monster. And she, the girls were afraid to touch her because they were afraid they would grow little extra fingers on their hands. And then they wouldn't let her play ring games. They didn't want to choose her. So they would always talk badly about her and say that she could let sparks come out of the little fingers. And that would, if you touched her, you would grow them and all of this. So she was isolated most of the time until she found a real dark-skinned black girl who was so dark that they taunted her too, saying she looked like she came out of a coke oven and calling her Sambo and all of these things. Well, the two got together. They became best of friends. And her name was Cora. So anyway, that was her only friend through school. So as she was conscious, she vowed that she would get vengeance on the chief leader of the girls who bullied her. So she was seeking all of her life for this girl. For this girl. Her name was Matilda. So there were a lot of terrible things that happened in the classroom, but then she found she was in the room of a teacher who cared about her and who cared about Cora. And this teacher had seen bullying going on outside as well as in her classroom, and she decided to be a part of the difference for this young lady. So she got the attention of the principal and told him her plan. And this was the same plan I used in my classroom when I taught junior high school. And so it worked in my room. Because the people who bullied were the people who really wanted attention and wanted to be important. And I told some of the students, don't ever let anyone have your power. Don't do it. Use humor or something else to get away, to get out of a difficult situation. But don't let anyone rule you and take your power. You are important. So my first, the first thing I did was called the pledge. I had all of the children sit in a semicircle, and I selected the main people who bullied, and I put them in the center. I had them draw a slip of paper from a box, and on the slips of paper were written various things like has a club foot or has a face that's partially burned or things like that. And the person in the center was supposed to have this deformity or condition, and all the people around her, the rest of the students, him or her, were supposed to taunt and bully and say ugly things back and forth to this person. After 5 minutes, we regrouped and asked the person in the center, "How did you feel?" And the bullies said, "I was mad. That wasn't right. I wanted to fight. It hurt me." So then the teacher says, "Do we all agree that words can hurt?" And the class responds, "Yes. Yes, Mrs. Sarah, we do." So she says, "What can we do to make sure no one is hurt by our words? Do you have any suggestions?" So Cora, the very dark girl, and Luna with six fingers in each hand, sat silently but open mouths in two different groups. So they said, "Make them stay in, make them write, call their mothers and tell on them." And Ryan had his hand up, and he was the biggest bully in the room. And the teacher says, "Wonderful, Ryan, you had your hand up." He was proud of being called on first, so he said, "We will not call people names." The others came up with statements that Mrs. Sarah wrote on the board. Luna was proud that her classmates really knew how to be kind. And she looked over at Cora, who was actually smiling. "Now, the teacher says, we have quite a few great ideas. Thank you. Now, I will give you a laminated copy of our class pledge tomorrow, and I will post one in our room. Suppose someone doesn't honor it. Suppose they forget. Then they can't tell him that. Make them stay in after school. We can tell them not to do it. Hit them in the mouth. No, we won't do that, Betty. Tell you what I'll do. If you go 2 weeks with no teasing or bullying, I will ask the principal if I can treat the class to a pizza party. Okay? Oh, boy, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. I'm reading from the book, of course. But this was the first thing. So after a month of this, which was very well done, the students wanted to honor the pledge, and there was no bullying or teasing. A month after this, there was the You're the Star program that I had, and I had this woman doing that, too. The class looked forward to it, but the other students who'd been bullied, Luna and Cora, were very upset. But they were once a week, a student was called to come up to the front. A plastic crown would be placed on his or her head, and each student in the class would have to say something nice about him or her. No one could duplicate what somebody else said. Luna and Cora were scared that they'd be called up to come up front and asked to go to the restroom every time the exercise began, but no one was permitted to go until after the exercise. The day came when Luna was the star, and she went up front timidly, looking down at her feet. The crown was set on her head, and the class was totally silent as the first person began to speak. "Well, she has on a real pretty dress. I like the way she wears her hair. She's kind. She's quiet. She makes good grades." After a while, they were trying hard to find positive things that were not duplicates, but they managed. She was relieved when she left the front, happy no one was mean. When Cora came up, the first thing that was said referred to her beautiful voice. She had been singing on the playground, and Cora even ventured a little smile at that. Both Cora and Luna loved that year in Mrs. Seurat's classroom. Their happiness was broken only by the remembrance, though, that although Matilda wasn't a part of that classroom, she was still a horror outside on the playground. So anyway.
Very good. Very good. Appreciate you sharing like that. That really brings the book to life. We need to conclude now, Yuli. Your book's title at Tildy's Thrift. Tell us how to get your book.
My book is available on Amazon. Amazon as an ebook, mm-hmm. as a hard copy, or as a paperback. It's a small book, and it can be read in one sitting. But it's such a fascinating book that the people in my church said, "We just can't wait for your other book to come out." Pastor bought three copies. Everybody in church bought copies. And I had some book signings, and it's been miraculous what has happened to my other book that came out about Hortonville. The Daily Press, the newspaper in the High Desert area, came to my house and did an interview of me and had it in the paper. So I was thrilled to follow it up.
Fantastic, right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to everyone by Westbow Press. Thank you, Yuli. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.